and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Stephen Chbosky and his 2017 film, Wonder. Returning on the show today to talk about Wonder is Professor Marie Westhaven. Professor Westhaven, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
So this film, it's fine. It's kind of one of those things that it's way too, like, saccharine sweet for me. Everything, it's all, the whole movie is meant to be very inspirational and very, it makes you get a tingling sensation in your heart and in your stomach, and you just want to hug everyone, you know. It's just kind of one of those things.
That was actually my reaction to the movie as well, but I read the book over the weekend, and now I have a new appreciation for what the author was trying to do, because it is a story about childhood, but she wanted to tell a story that did have some hope and did have a character who had this disfigurement. And she wrote the book because she was out with her son once and they saw a kid with this and it made her little boy cry. Mm-hmm. So she got to thinking about, well, you know, first of all, how do you deal with, you know, your own child to get them to be accepting of shocking things that sometimes you see you're not supposed to react to? And also, wow, what is it like to be the kid? And then, of course, well, what is it like to be the parent? And all the things that go with it. So she was really examining something that I think is very important to think about and consider in terms of what it's like to grow up. And also that in terms of it being a movie for children, I think it's a little bit better than the average fare.
That's a very good point. And touching on what you said about based on a book, one of the things I was a little bit confused because I remember some of the promotional material for this film because it just came out last year. I thought it was based on a true story. Because there was this, because looking it up, I got a little bit confused on it. There is a kid named Nathaniel Newman who has this condition. And I thought this was based on him, but no, but he saw the film and he just wrote a letter saying how much it meant to him. And, you know, and then there's pictures he's speaking on stage with Jacob Tremblay, the kid who played, you know, the kid in the movie. So, yeah, but it's a really good point. I will say that this movie would be helpful for, like, little kids to see. If you screen this in, like, middle school or elementary school and say, like, you know, put yourself in their shoes for a second, kind of that thing. You know, see how that feels if you say something like that or you call them names and that kind of stuff. I think it is a very helpful film, I would say, for children to see.
The book, actually, I thought was more powerful because it reminded me of a lot of things that I think are universal, like how scared you are when you start a new school, how much you want to fit in. How terrible it is when everybody decides you're the odd man out and it's okay to bully you because of whatever, because sometimes it's not even about the condition that this kid had. They just single somebody out. And I think everybody remembers that. Everybody remembers what that was like, whether you were, which side you were on. And it's very true to life, and they don't try to save the kid from it. He endures it the way everybody does. And what I found very effective was, since I'd already seen the movie, I was casting, you know, Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson when I'm reading the parents' lines in the book.
Oh, really?
And they fit perfectly. I mean, the dad in the book is totally Owen Wilson, just that sort of happy-go-lucky, ready to put a positive spin on everything, just that very, you know, that personality that Owen Wilson has.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. But he doesn't say wow in the book.
He
doesn't say wow in the movie either.
I was like, wow, he didn't say it.
But they're, you know, just well-meaning people. Mm-hmm. And Julia Roberts in the book has some great lines because, you know, reading it as an adult and as a mother, you see more of what she's saying than what she's actually saying. There's a point in the story where Augie, the kid, has gone to visit his new school and get a little tour, and he meets some kids. And so afterward, his mother is just, you know, pressing the point of this one kid, Julian, he just seems so nice. He just seems so nice. And he's like, Mom, he's not nice. And then she immediately says, oh, is he one of those kids that acts one way around kids and another way around adults? I thought that was very on point. That's exactly something a mother would say.
And you do see that scene in the film, too. So Now that you've read the book, would you say that the book does more character development and maybe more rounds the characters more off?
I think it does because it takes a different protagonist. You know, I think it's divided in like five parts. Mm-hmm. So the first time you get everything from Augie's point of view, and then you find out his sister's point of view, and his sister's friend point of view, and the mother's point of view. So you get all of these different viewpoints looking at the same situation. I found that very effective.
Yeah. And that kind of leads into one of my problems with the film, that it is a little, like I going to the saccharine sweetness, it's a little bit too manipulative. And there's some, like, you saw about all the point of view plots. Some of them worked better, I think, than others, and some of them didn't really get resolved much at all. The one thing I'm thinking of, the sister's friend. It's sort of, you know, she was best friends with, they were best friends, and then all of a sudden she's kind of ignoring her. And then she seems like she's ditching her for her the popular group. And then you realize that she couldn't face her because she made up a lie that because she's so jealous that they have this life and she wanted that life. So she basically been lying about it, saying, oh, I'm the one that has the kid with this condition. You know, these are my parents and everything, just to make herself look better. At the end of the film, it's sort of the play, which was, once again, you could see coming a mile away. It's like, oh, I didn't get the part. I'm just the understudy. Like, mm-hmm. She's going to get the part.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the scene. She's going to go get the play. Their parents are like, oh, but parents aren't going to come. They're going to come, you know.
And it's our town, too, if you really want to lean on the, you know, sentimental keys.
Yeah.
In the book, though, I thought that that worked out better, because, and I saw it coming a mile away, too, but the friend in particular, because it goes into her thought process and how the lie comes out without her even thinking about it when she's at summer camp. And then it makes her popular. And so you get also the reason I thought that was valuable is because you see the sister's point of view and she's very sympathetic. But at the same time, you see a high school girl who thinks, I don't want people in my new school to see that I have a brother with this condition because I just got over that being the story of my life. You know, I'd like this to be my time to just not have anything like that. You understand it. You also realize how incredibly cruel it is. And her friend is able to sort of adopt her situation and make it work for her, which is, you know, well, you could take this approach, you could take that approach. And the only way you can show both is have two different people do two different things.
And I was also looking at the film from a logical point of view. I'm like, eventually that's going to have to, you know, she's going to have to face that she told a lie. Somebody's going to be like, hey, isn't that your brother? Like they run to like, oh, that's your brother, right? Or aren't those your parents? And then, you know, she's got to tell, like, she never had the scene where she's telling her friend, like, look, I made up this lie. I wanted your life. Like, they needed to have some sort of resolution because eventually that's going to come back to bite her. You can't just conveniently not just sweep that under the rug and, like, everyone will forget about it.
Except you kind of can. If you go away to summer camp where you meet a whole bunch of kids that you don't go to school with, you can be anybody. You know, you can totally make up things and be that person. The only thing you have to do is make sure that they never catch up with your real life.
That's the thing. Like, if it's summer camp,
you're catfishing your own self.
Especially in today's day and age. Like, I met somebody super inspirational from summer camp. Here's this person's name. You know, what if they, like, friend you on Facebook? It's like, oh, but this aren't you? This isn't your son. I mean, this isn't your brother.
Your brother, yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that, this is kind of a minor nitpick, I'll completely agree with you, but there was quite a bit of product placement.
Oh, was there? Oh, I didn't notice.
I'm referring to the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, there was a lot of Star Wars stuff in the book too.
Okay, now I get it. Kids like Star Wars. I went through my phase, and I still kind of like it now. But in today's oversaturation of Star Wars, like you cannot, whenever a new movie comes out, there's going to be a million different commercials about Star Wars. It felt a little bit forced, like, here's Chewbacca. Here's Chewbacca again. Now here's Darth Sidious. Now he's talking about Boba Fett. Now they're talking about having lightsaber fights. I'm a little bit like, is that product placement? And there was, like, they're playing Minecraft. That was another one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, buy Minecraft. Buy Star Wars placement. Have you seen the new Star Wars film yet?
I did think it was funny when I was looking up background and it said something about how the actor Jacob Tremblay was also really into Star Wars.
Yeah,
I thought,
that.
Well, how hard would it be to find a boy who doesn't like Star Wars? Like,
that's so rare.
In the book, it works much better because he sees a doctor who tries to get him to accept the hearing aids that he wears, and he doesn't want to. And the doctor is able to relate to him with Star Wars.
Yeah.
So he's talking about, is it Boba Fett who has some sort of funny ear thing?
He wears a helmet.
So that's why he wanted to choose that character. And the doctor mentions that character. And he says, hey, it's not like you have to look like Jar Jar. So he feels like the doctor understands him. And the Darth Sidious thing was a mean way for that one kid.
The one kid to make fun of him. Just enough Star Wars. I'm tired of it. just stop.
But you have to admit, it's an easy reference. Mm-hmm. And also another touchstone, like every kid would understand that.
You know, you were talking about Jacob Tremblay, a big fan of Star Wars. I remember when he got nominated for The Room. I mean, sorry, Room.
Room.
The Room is a completely different movie. But for Room, it was the same year Force Awakens came out. So he took a picture with Daisy Ridley, who plays Rey in the movie, because they were both at the Oscars that year. So
I think his favorite character he's on record is Poe.
Okay.
But speaking of Jacob Tremblay and mm-hmm. Room, I thought he was a great choice for this movie because he has that sort of older quality to him where he can play a character who is in the most awful situation you can imagine, but manages to, you know, be this plucky kid who, you know, perseveres and you're rooting for them the whole time.
Yeah. And I will say I'm going to change that. There's a couple of bad performances, but of the main cast of the Owen Wilson, wow, Julia Roberts, the sister, Jacob Tremblay, they're all pretty good.
Yeah, solid.
Yeah. And that's another thing is, like I talked about, it's a bit too manipulative. There's a bit too, this movie has, at least for me, is a bit too much fat. Like this, it feels like this could have been like, I don't know, like a made-for-TV movie that's like hour 10 minutes or
An
something.
An ABC after-school special.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
A very special movie.
Although I think it resonates more for kids that age and for parents. Mm-hmm. I'm just not to rag on you for not being a child or a parent. But the I was reading about Julia Roberts in the movie, and the director had to miss his daughter's fourth birthday because they were shooting. And she said to him, you know, your daughter's not going to remember her fourth birthday. But she's going to remember that you directed Wonder. And I thought, wow, that's really kind of arrogant. And then when I read the book, I thought, yeah, I would think that a four-year-old, once she got to be five, six, seven, she would be very impressed with the fact that that was one of her dad's movies. Mm-hmm. So I think she was on to something with that remark.
Speaking of the Owen Wilson, wow. There's also the Julia Roberts
yes.
laugh.
Yes. Like, there's even a scene where she opens a box and does that pretty woman laugh. Otherwise, she looks very muted.
Yeah, it's definitely because she's all you think of something like Pretty Woman or like Ocean's 11 or even something. She's very kind of out, you know, she's very, you know.
Bubbly. Vivacious.
Yeah.
That big smile.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That laugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's very, I think that works well because she's so, you know, I can imagine being a parent having to deal with these things. And then while you're also she's trying to work on some thesis or something, right? Yeah. So she's, I imagine that would be a very subdued performance and not like, ha-ha, like Julia Roberts.
I think it was also an interesting dilemma to put forth because, of course, this is people's real situation. That at some point you have to make a decision of whether you're going to mainstream your child. Who has mm-hmm. no developmental disabilities, can completely keep up with the academics.
Yeah.
That's not it. But, you know, do you subject them to the cruelties of childhood? But one of the messages in the movie is, once they all get used to him, he's just another kid. And that's a really important thing to notice. And what, you know, makes them rally around him is outsiders picking on him. You're not picking on one of ours.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden he's one of the kids.
Yeah, like at the end when the bullies start picking on him, the people who were bullying him earlier on, they stand up for him and then they respect him because he didn't bow down and kowtow.
Yeah.
It kind of like I said, this film a little bit like the bullying scenes, like I knew there was going to be bullying, but it goes on a little bit too much. Like even that scene at the end when they go to the summer camp. I get it's the fact that they show that the people who are bullying him are standing up against other bullies. But it's like I said, like a little bit of, like I said, this movie didn't need to be like, it's like what, hour 35? It could have been an hour. They could have trimmed a lot of fat.
I think that it also that works better in the book too, because it's like different arenas. You know, you mm-hmm. have, because and you get to be inside his head a lot where he tells you a lot of things that, you know, you sort of knew, but having him say it makes it more real. Like he says, you know, he's gotten to the point where going to school is no big deal because everybody, mm-hmm. he says after 1 week, you know, the people in his immediate class, you know, got used to him. And after 2 weeks, you know, the people in the vicinity by the end of the month, everybody had seen him and, you know, stopped doing that sort of being taken aback. But when he goes to his sister's play, he is surrounded by people who've never seen him before. And so it is in his face, in his face, in his face. And you realize, God, you never get to have a break. So when he goes to the camp and he's dreading it, because again, new people, new situations, the best part of the book is that part, because he has such a great time until the end when the bullies pick on him. And you think, good, I'm so glad you're able to experience all these things without everything having to be about what's wrong with your face, what's wrong with your face, and feeling ugly. Because everybody feels ugly. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing I think everybody can relate to. Everybody feels like, oh, I'm that kid that is not enough, no matter what, no matter what you do. So yes, it the movie, I think the movie doesn't work as well as the book. The book I thought was really a pleasure to read.
It seems like the book has a lot more depth and stuff going on than this movie, but it's still a fine movie. it does get a little bit into the bully, the Julian character. Like this, he reminds me of a Key and Peele sketch. Now, bear with me here. There's like a Key and Peele sketch where this kid is getting bullied, but the bully is like saying what he actually, like what's going on with him psychologically. So he beats him up and like calls him gay, and he goes, "And I call you gay because I'm struggling with feelings inside my own body. And the reason why I act out violently because I don't know how to control these emotions." And then he beats him up again. He goes, "I beat you up because I come from a low income household and my father, and I have a neglectful father, and I take out this anger at my father on other kids." And then his father picks him up and he goes, "All right, son, I'm going to pick you up. And then I'm going to go home and drink a lot to forget my miserable life and forget my own shortcomings as a father." And it's, you know, it goes on and on and on. Like, that reminds me of this Julian kid, because like I knew it was like, okay, there's going to be some sort of showing that they're going to make him feel a little bit sympathetic. So we get that at the end when his mom's terrible. He comes from these like stuck up rich family who just all about money and stature, and they don't even really think about the feelings of the kid. And then the kid finally feels bad about all the terrible things he's done to
Augie. Yeah, well, you know, you kind of have to have that story arc, because you don't want to leave any kid as like hopeless. But it's interesting in the book also the way, because Augie's voice in the book is very authentic, and he talks about the war that goes on where Julian and his henchmen, there's always henchmen, go out of their way to torment him throughout the school year, and everybody knows about it, everybody sees it, nobody does anything. But he says after a while, he said all the girls got sick of it. Those were his words. And then he said then the henchmen got sick of it too. And again, that's something that happens. But the Julian character doesn't want to give up their power, so they just escalate and escalate until, you know, they get a rise out of somebody. You just wonder why nobody else ever just turns around and
that's kind of how it
takes
is,
on the bully. Yeah.
Somebody on the internet wrote an interesting little criticism of this film, because it's all thing about don't stereotype, don't judge people. But somebody criticized the Augie character, because one of the first thing he does when he meets those three kids, when they're touring him around, he judges them by their shoes. He looks, oh, this is the trust fund kid, which is Julian. Oh, this is hand-me-down kid, which is his friend.
Jack Will.
And then the girl is like, oh, this is the crazy kid. And the one I brought, and I thought it was unfair to the girl, that girl character, because they kind of make her out to be a punchline, like, oh, she's self-involved. All she thinks about is her stage. She never stops talking. But when you look at her, she was the only one that, one of the few people that never criticized Augie, never joined in making fun of him. And she called people out when they were making fun of him. And I'm like, she deserved a little bit more than just the, you know, the parody and satirizing that she got in the movie.
In the book, Summer is completely a positive character. There's no negative.
No, not Summer.
Not Summer.
The blonde girl that was talking about, you know,
in her commercial.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that was unfortunate. I don't think they did bring that up in the book, that she always went back to that touchstone, that's who she was. But it also pointed out that all the kids had something that they insisted was them. You know, this one's good at sports or whatever. So you do have a chance to declare yourself, I guess. But the Summer character in the book, there was a lot of great stuff that she and Augie did about all the names of people that could sit at their table because they had summer-like names, because August is a summer month. And that was charming.
Yeah, and You know, one thing I also want to talk about, because it seems like in the books, I did a little bit of research. It seems they build up more on the relationship that the sister's friend has with Augie, mm-hmm. because there is you see in the little call that there is a good friendship with them. Like, she has a nickname for him, Major Tom, because he's always into space stuff.
She's the one who gave him the astronaut helmet. Yeah. Which has a very small role in the book. You know, that's only mentioned like in passing, that she's the one who gave it to him and he doesn't take it off for 2 years. And then you find out at the end that Owen Wilson is the one who got rid of it.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry.
Wow.
They could take we took a drinking game a couple weeks ago for deep cuts. Like, this is take a drinking game every time you say, wow.
Wow. I did think it was a nice touch to put Trick or Treat in there, because that's the one day a year where he feels normal. Because everybody's got a mask on and nobody can see who he is. Mm-hmm. They also are able to use that as a way that when you are invisible, then you hear what people really say about you, which is not always good.
Mm-mm. One of the things that I think is a little bit unrealistic, he's wearing that costume and there's blood on it. There is no way in hell you're going to be allowed to wear that costume to an elementary school.
That's a good point.
Yeah, because I remember when I was that age, I dressed up as Darth Maul. Because this was when the Phantom Menace came out, and I was going through my Star Wars phase. And I wanted to bring in my Darth Maul lightsaber. Mm-hmm. I couldn't bring that in because that was considered a weapon. And this was like just like a year or two removed from Columbine. So if you can't bring in a little toy plastic lightsaber, I don't think you're going to be able to
wear a bloody mask.
You
know? Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Plus, you know who everybody is. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of your friends in your class with their costumes on, it's not like you don't know who everybody is.
Like, you're gonna tell everybody, oh, I'm going to be, you know, Scream, or I'm going to be, this person.
Or even if they're expecting you to show up in another costume, when you do show up, they say hello to you and you figure out, because of their voice, that's your friend.
Yeah. Did you think that the dialogue in the film, as far as the children go, do you think it's authentic? Because I would say overall it's pretty believable.
I found it very believable.
And does that compare well to the book?
Yes. And the book I felt was very, very believable. The way he talks about himself, the way everybody talks about themselves was very on point. And it only dealt with the sympathies you're supposed to deal with that character. It didn't the kid's character never said, boy, this must be really hard for my parents. No, because kids mm-hmm. don't think that.
No,
They're thinking about their own experience. And the parents, their point of view is, of course, my situation and what I'm doing. They're trying to understand what's going on with Augie and be helpful. But, you know, they're kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And your heart breaks when your kid experiences cruelty. And you can't stop it. It's inevitable.
Yeah. And that's the thing, because I think a lot of movies, when they do youth-centered films, like somebody in high school or younger, and you're always like, who wrote this? And it's a bad movie. Like, who wrote this dialogue? And you see a picture and it's like this like guy, middle-aged guy with a beard. Like, oh yeah, because he knows what's hip with the kids.
Right.
Yeah. So it's good that you get somebody who actually gets an understanding of what, you know, of child and childlike dialogue.
And what kids think about today, which is apparently still Star Wars.
Yeah. And I think also we could talk a little bit about director Stephen Chbosky. His other best known film was probably Perks of Being a Wallflower. Now, I know he not only directed that, but didn't he also write, because it's a book, was he also the author of that book?
I don't know. I'm not really familiar with that, because that's actually young adult, and I don't have any young adults in my house anymore. I know it was a big movie. He also did Beauty and the Beast.
He wrote the screenplay. He didn't direct it, but another Emma Watson. So have you seen Beauty and the Beast mm-hmm. or Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Haven't seen the Wallflower movie. Did Haven't see Beauty and the Beast. Did not like it.
Yeah. Why? Well, you know, just
all
Disney
that money, and they couldn't come up with a believable castle, for one thing. Mm-hmm. Don't even get me started.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
You know, if it's a good movie, don't remake it. That's always been my belief.
And they put in some mean jokes in there, too, that I didn't appreciate.
Yeah. I heard Emma Watson can't sing. Is that true?
Oh, now that I didn't notice. I thought the singing seemed perfectly fine.
Okay. All right. So this is part of the Wonder event. We've been doing a lot talking about the movies. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what the Wonder event is?
The theme for the Horowitz Center for this season is wonder. All of the things that make you, that dazzle you in the world. But just the word itself, wonder, when I was putting together the movies for the film festival, of course, I looked up that in the title. And of course, this movie was the first one to pop up.
Yeah, because it's the wonder.
Wonder. It's actually the word. And it was a big movie when it came out last year.
Yeah, I remember
it did
that.
Very well with kids. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously one of the ones we picked. The other ones have wonder in the title or wonder as part of the topic of the movie. And that will be in the during International Week in November, and then during Diversity Week at the end of February in 2019.
So besides Wonder, what will the other films be playing? Because we've talked about a lot already. There's going to be Wonderstruck.
Wonderstruck.
To the Wonder, Wonder Woman, Professor
Wonder
Marston
Wheel,
and the Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Stevie Wonder, live in concert.
Yeah.
And the only one, and of course, a Kurosawa movie called
One Wonderful
one
Sunday.
One Wonderful Sunday, Wonderful Town. And then the only movie that doesn't have it in the title but is full of wonder is The Shape of Water.
Yeah. So, you know, I just realized this is a 2017 film. You had like four different movies with wonder in the title from last year. You had Wonderstruck, Wonder Woman, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, and Wonder.
Mm-hmm. So it must have been something about that, something in the water that year.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you get to do To the Wonder, and you get to whisper because it's a Terrence Malick film. All right, so getting close to the end of my questions, is there anything else about Wonder or Stephen Chbosky or anything else you want to bring up?
Well, I did want to mention that one of the things that Julia Roberts was working on with her thesis, the fake thesis in the movie, had to do with William Blake. And you know, William Blake, I don't know if you're a fan of William Blake.
He's a poet, right?
He's a poet.
That shows how much a fan I am.
He's also, he was also a very good illustrator. He's best known to movie audiences as the illustrator of the dragon in the Hannibal Lecter film Red Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
But he writes a lot about, like, the beast within. That's what a lot of his poems have to do with. So I thought there was kind of a nice, you know, way to tie in that idea in sort of the background. Also, the bicycle that you see Augie riding in the film is the same bicycle that Elliot is seen riding in E.T.
Oh.
So another way to, you know, weave in that kind of childhood idea. Also, that poor kid had to sit for an hour and a half to apply all that makeup every time he went.
Mm. Yeah. All right. And then last question I'll have is tell us a little about the classes you have coming up.
This semester I am teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, World Cinema, and Film and Philosophy. And next semester I will do Intro, American, and World, and Women in Film.
All right. And one thing I do want to bring up, since we've been talking a lot about Owen Wilson and his wow, there is a meme on YouTube. And it's like one of the lightsaber fights in Star Wars also connecting. And every time the lightsabers clash, it plays wow. So wow, wow, wow. So instead of the vroom, 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 it's wow, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great Owen Wilson tribute right there.
Right there. And then they also made one. There's like a super cut of every time Owen Wilson says wow in movies. Like it's right next to the thing which says every time Tom Cruise runs in one of his movies.
Okay, yeah, because they get that in there every chance they get. I've liked Owen Wilson and everything I've seen him in, especially Midnight in Paris.
Yeah, and he does like pretty much like every movie with Wes Anderson, right?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I've only seen one Wes Anderson film. Rushmore.
Okay.
I don't know. He doesn't seem like he's a director for me. His style would get really irritating. Do you have any opinion on Wes Anderson?
He's hit or miss for me. I don't like everything that he does.
Okay. Anyway, well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been discussing Stephen Chbosky and his 2017 film Wonder. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Tuesday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com in the category Armchair Directors. Tune into Dragon Digital Radio to hear the show a week before it's on Podbean. Russ Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying you can't blend in, you were born to stand out.